5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swingles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, where I definitely argue with robots. Thank you to our sponsors, which make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years in the United States and Canada. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. It's basically the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-powered law firms in your area. It gets you access to a lawyer that you probably wouldn't be able to afford, maybe wouldn't want to afford. $30 a month will get you in the door, $1 a day. You need contracts created. If your work wants you to sign some weird employment contract that says that you agree to do some sort of medical procedure, if they want to inject you with something and you feel a little uncomfortable, send it to your lawyer. If you get a speeding ticket, a red light traffic ticket, one of those things, send everything to your attorney. That's what they do for a living. You have access to them. If you're somebody that runs a small business and you want the small business plan, they have that. If you're looking for Identity Shield, there's an option for that. If you're somebody that carries a gun, they have legal paperwork for that as well. There's all kinds of things that you can get access to for a very reasonable price. That we created a website specific for this show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. Just go there, take a look, see what you think. If you find something that you might like, pull the trigger on it. Or if you've got a friend or family member that you think might benefit, send it their way. Legal Shield, don'tgetpushedaround.com. Check it out, see what you think. Also to Chemical Free Body, they've been with us from the beginning. Tim James has been on the show more than anybody else because every time he comes on, he gives us very reasonable, practical, free advice on how to improve our health. And I'll tell you what, It's the one thing you're just going to have to do yourself. Nobody's coming to save you. If you've made the decision to improve your health and you want to find some products that actually work, that aren't garbage, go over to chemicalfreebody.com. Take a look. Pat Miletich just launched his Super Soldier product over there. You can take a look and find that. If you see something that you like, use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. And of course, Tim James is so insane about his products. He's got a double your money back price guarantee. I don't think too many people have taken him up on it. The products work. I take Green 85 every single morning, and I have for the last 3 years. I can attest. It's a great product, and it works. Chemicalfreebody.com, promo code MACRO. Well, I've been excited for this one for a while. So we have the best-selling author of such books as Joyless Kingdom, The Fucking Lunatic, Tales from the Inverted World, which, of course, is now a component of TimCast. You may catch him over there on Tim Pool's show, TimCast IRL, when he brings in such crazy guests as Kanye West and Carrie Lake. Without further ado, hey, everybody, it's Shane Cashman. What's up, Shane? How are you? Good to see you.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, dude. It was awesome.
How do you get Kanye West? Like, what is that process even like? Not that I'm going to try and go get him for this show, but like, when you make the decision, like, hey, Tim, let's get Kanye West to come on the show. And he's like, all right, go make that happen. And then you go, fuck, what do I do? How'd you know him?
Well, I didn't bring him onto the show. I got to him after the whole thing happened. So I forget how we got him on. Through our booker, knew some people who had mutual friends. But what happened was, I'm sure everybody saw, he walked off IRL maybe 10 minutes in. We were all there, and I just kind of surfed on God's hand. I was just like, God just dropped me into the room. I knew where he was going to be after he walked off. And I had been a fan of Kanye forever, since day one, you know, since Through the Wire. So I just went up to him, and I was just like, I mean, it was ridiculous that I could just walk up to him in Tim's kitchen, right? He's like eating some cookies, and I'm just like, yo, man, I believe in you. I would love it if you went up back into the studio and told everybody else why they should believe in you too. Cause, you know, and I gave him my whole spiel about that. He was not feeling it. He made up his mind. That was it. But I guess in that was maybe 5 or 10 minutes of a conversation we had where we talked about music really quickly. I brought up his opera that he wrote and performed. It's a beautiful opera. No. Yeah, it's really, really cool. I think it's called Mary. It's on YouTube. There's like unofficial clips on YouTube, and there's one specific part, I think it's like 19 minutes in or something like that, that is one of my favorite parts of music that he's ever made. So we brought that up, and I'm just like, dude, you got to release this, like, for real. Yeah. And I think whatever happened, we started to vibe, and he just told me to fly to LA. So I flew to LA like 2 days later, and then we kind of spent the weekend together. And like, you know, that was 6 months ago. So people might forget that in those 2 days where I wasn't with him after he left Tim, and before I got to him in LA, the whole Alex Jones thing happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was already kind of crazy what happened with IRL, but then, you know, what happened on InfoWars, the whole world felt like it was on fire. You know, that happened while I was in the airport on the way to go see him. And I'm watching people in the airport, like people are reacting. I'm seeing people on their phones. I'm getting messages from all my friends, family members who don't know I'm going there. They're like, oh, Kanye's done. This is it. I'm over it. And I'm like, okay, all right. I'm on my way to go see him right now. And we spent a really awesome weekend together, going to church and talking politics.
That is so wild. Yeah, man. When he went on Alex's show, I was like, oh, this is either the end of his career, or this is some Andy Kaufman-esque performance that is going to go down as the greatest, like, troll job ever, because he was just in rare form. And you know, I mean, like, he was funny. He was being over the top, obviously. I think a lot of people don't understand sort of like the nuance of trolling, or when you're mm-hmm. so over the top that it's sort of meant to be like shocking and outrageous, but maybe not serious. Yeah. And some people are like, oh yeah, man, he's done. I was like, no, this has got to be part of something bigger. So you guys go, you go to LA, you go to his church. I know he's been doing this. Didn't he start it like at Coachella, where he was having like these Sunday services, and he was, I read an article last week that said that he spent like $50 million out of pocket to keep these services going. I haven't lived in LA in a while, but I lived there for 20 years. Is it a permanent thing in LA? What he's doing?
Yeah. So real quick, I want to talk about Sunday services. It's one of my favorite things he's done. But it's so funny you say the Andy Kaufman thing, because that's literally what I told him when I saw him in LA. I was like, dude, that's Andy Kaufman. You were doing Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
He's a huge, huge fan of Andy Kaufman.
Is he really?
he's like obsessed with Andy Kaufman. There was years and years and years ago, he was on Instagram posting Andy Kaufman stuff. So I knew that. And I grew up loving Andy Kaufman. So it was funny that two of my favorite like artists were now, like Andy was possessing Kanye, and he confirmed it. I mean, he was like, that was part of the thing. I was Andy Kaufman. And like, he said it was Bruce Lee and Andy Kaufman were in him for InfoWars. So you're totally right. And he just knows how to press those buttons to be like, what can I do next? That's going to really burn everything down. Cause I don't think he's afraid of kind of starting from scratch. I think he kind of likes that. He feeds off of that. I'm going to burn everything and then just regrow. And he always, in my mind, gets stronger with that. But in terms of the church, so the Coachella thing happened, I think the Sunday services were happening for maybe a year before that.
They were
happening in Africa. They might've started in Africa when he kind of bounced and went to Africa, did some things. And I think he came back and started doing them more seriously, where he would have these small, James Turrell is an artist he really likes. He's the guy who does all the light, neon lights and stuff. He kind of bathes rooms in neon light. So he kind of mimicked a James Turrell art installation with the early Sunday services, where he'd have the choir singing. People like Sia would show up and then do renditions of her popular songs, but made like biblical, right?
Oh, like unplugged version. Cool.
Yes. And if you haven't seen the Sia versions of the Sunday service, like, you have to do it. They're incredibly powerful. I believe she's been pretty open about her Christianity, and those videos are incredible. So
that's rare.
They were happening for a while. Yeah, I know. They were happening for a while, and then they kind of grew. And I believe Coachella was like the first major production where he kind of built that mound. He had everyone wearing those colorless outfits. And yeah, so that was the thing. He takes that very seriously, and he put out that album, I believe it's Jesus Is Born, and that was the Sunday service album. So it's like some of those songs are 90s like R&B songs turned gospel, so they change the lyrics a little bit. Some of them are just old hymns. It's one of my favorite records. I went out of my way to review that album for pitchfork.com. it's like that music website that is, they're terrible, but they hate Kanye. They used to love him, and I was like, I'm gonna make a good positive review for Jesus Is Born for Pitchfork. And they took it. They didn't, you know, they left out a lot of stuff, and we had a little pushback on our views on Kanye. But he takes that stuff very seriously. And I believe when I was in LA, he was in the process of buying the church we were at. That might have happened. I think that was reported on. And I think that's where a lot of the Sunday service stuff might be happening now, stuff with the school he's doing and all that stuff. But yeah, it's one of my favorite things that he does.
That's really cool. Hey, I'm curious though, because he gave us a little insight into the Harley Pasternak world, and we understand handlers, and I have real big problems about Cedars-Sinai. I think that's a deep state hospital, like the way I think Johns Hopkins Medical Center is as well. And every time, you know, he's talked about getting his brain wiped and, you know, send you back to whatever dream world or and then he disappears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back and he's more subdued. Now, is that the media's, just my perception based on what I'm seeing in the media that he's more subdued? Has he made a conscious decision? Is sort of that part of the bit over and he's now like on to something new? Or did they bring him in for a little maintenance work?
Are you talking about like right now how
recently,
he is?
Yeah, the last 4 months version of
him. I mean, you could go back and forth. I haven't seen him in person to know, like, that would be for me the only way to judge. But you could go back and forth being like, yeah, they've subdued him. My gut says he lit that fire that he started, you know, with that Lex Fridman, the IRL, the Alex Jones week, and then kind of bounced. Then he got married, right? Yeah. And then And then he came back, and in my opinion, he's probably rebuilding into whatever the music he's doing now. I still think the campaign is happening for the presidency. I do. I'm not positive, but I do think that's happening. So that's that. But while you were talking, the reason I asked if you're talking about now is because he came back subdued from the hospital that first time, right? Which is around the era 5 or 6 years ago when he came back and said he was bipolar because they told him he was bipolar. And he was on medication. He was pretty open about that. So, you know, at that point, it seemed like that's what they were doing. They had found a way to subdue one of the biggest disruptors in history, right? In terms of like pop, right? And the culture. And he talks about that, you know, in terms of he thought he was bipolar because they told him. I don't think he believes that anymore. I think he believes, you know, I don't think he considers it a mental disorder. He calls it a superpower, right?
Yeah.
So at that time, he did come back kind of subdued, but at the same time, he also wrote 5 records and produced them all in one summer, and they came out in a span of 5 weeks. So it's weird. Like, his idea of subdued is very different. But yeah, when you see him now, he's not doing all that wild stuff. But as someone who's followed him for so long, his career is like this. You know, it's like he'll do the fires, and then he goes back to scratch, and then who knows what's next? Like, I can't imagine what's next, right? Because I can go back to Jesus Walks, that being an early fire that he would start because it was taboo to say Jesus on a pop song, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't take him seriously. And then, you know, you can go into the Taylor Swift thing, you know, what happened with his mom dying. You can talk about, you know, every album cycle seems to be attached to some outburst. My gut tells me is he's probably back at like square one and building up to whatever is happening next.
The presidency of the United States is what we're talking about here.
I mean, it's funny because when I was with him in his, like, he had a hotel room and it was part studio and it was just me and him for like 2 or 3 hours talking. And we joked about like what's next. Cause like when you're talking to him, it's like you've done a lot of crazy stuff, you know, in terms of music, in terms of fashion, all this stuff, whether people like it or not, you know, he's done crazy stuff. And I was like, what is next? Like the moon? Is it space after the presidency? Cause like, and he, it was funny for me to say it, but he kind of considered it, right? He was like, well, maybe, you know?
That's the funniest part is that he's like, oh yeah, give me a pen. Yeah. Let me write this down. Yeah. We're going to space next.
Yeah.
Kanye in space.
I love it.
I'm gonna be the first guy to record an album at the International Space Station.
So that, you know, you joke about it, but it's very, very possible.
I know. That's crazy. What? Let's talk about this election, because you guys over there at Tim's show obviously are all over this. We've got two components of this. Obviously, the Democratic side and the Republican. Let's start with the Democratic side because we have a pedophile president, undeniable, and who shit his pants with the Pope. That should be automatic disqualification, and yet somehow it's passed off as stunning bravery, and I don't really know why. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the problem.
Mm-hmm. Very strange.
Why are they afraid of him?
He's another disruptor, right? And there's a lot of things I'm not so into with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Me too.
There's a lot, you know, we've got a lot to learn about him, you know, but he understands so many things that I also really care about in terms of the prison planet we live in, where everything's poison and you have to navigate this world of poison in the supermarket, in your drinking water. And it's funny to me because he's saying things now in a more political, you know, fashion that Alex Jones has been saying for a long time. You know,
of course,
there's a really funny clip. I retweeted it a few days ago, where they put side by side RFK Jr. talking about the stuff that's in the water turning the frogs gay. He doesn't say turn the frogs gay. He dresses it up into a more scientific thing.
And atrazine.
Then back and forth with Alex Jones, with atrazine. And then it's like, okay, he's just saying it in different terms, but it's literally what Alex has been lambasted for in the corporate press forever. But so I love those things. I love that he understands, you know, the vaccine issue. You know, I do judge people's character on how they responded to COVID, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm willing to offer more grace to people who are willing to open up and rebel against that institution, you know, big pharma, the government, the lockdowns, the media. And he did that. And he set a pretty good example. So I love all that. So I think the corporate press and the government hates that clearly, right? They censor a lot of us. They censor these politicians. They censor scientists. So it's kind of crazy that we have someone willing to go against Biden from the Democratic side. He's more of a old school Democrat for the most part. And they don't like that. And when it comes to Biden, I mean, he's a pedophile. He's a reanimated corpse. You know, and he's kind of like the complete victim. So on their side, I guess that's the reward, right?
There's no higher status than being a complete victim, right?
Right. I mean, he could be a different gender and he could still change that for all we know. He could be a different race. He could still change that too. You know, they could still change all of that. But he's a real problem. And it's interesting to me, I think, because they also see Biden as someone that they can control easier. You know, with Robert, I don't think they can control him. And he, I love this about him too. He truly understands how evil and depraved our CIA is, right? Yeah. I mean, it's insane to me. I mean, it's kind of becoming normal now, but it's really insane to me that we have a candidate who is literally saying the CIA killed my uncle, who was a former president, and my dad, right? That's crazy, right? And people, I think it's become so, the theory of that has become so watered down because everyone hears about it all the time for decades that people kind of shrug it off. But that's crazy, right? And that is going against one of our craziest, most depraved institutions that we really need to, I'd like to abolish. And I don't think he said abolish. I think he wants to, you know, rework it, which I'm willing to understand. I'm willing to hear that out. But I think since he's such a disruptor, they have a problem. So they'll ignore him. You see those New York Times articles written about him where they have to, in the headline, they have to add all these qualifiers before they even get to his name, right? He's anti-vax. He's conspiracy theorist. He's all these things. Presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Yeah. So it's fascinating to me. He's interesting to me. I still don't know how I feel about him with the gun rights. I don't know with the abortion stuff. I'd like to hear more about that. I don't know with the war stuff. Like, I didn't listen to the whole Joe Rogan interview yet, so I'm not sure. I'm maybe halfway through it. But I'd like to hear where he's at with the Ukraine thing. I've heard different kind of things with him about that. So, you know, it remains to be seen. However, he's cognizant, so that's cool.
that's great for us, but not so great for them, because in the deep state, because as you said, he's Biden is more controllable. He's quite literally a puppet, and so they can infuse in him whatever they want. I think that, you know, you would, if somebody told you that a Kennedy was going to run for president in the Democratic Party, you'd say, well, that guy's going to win for sure. And yet they are coming up and inventing new ways to hate him, which is interesting. I talked to my liberal leaning mother-in-law, and I mentioned his name, and she said, I couldn't even get the word out of my mouth before she said, he's a disgrace. And I was like, oh, really? So obviously she doesn't speak for the entire Democratic establishment, but it was interesting to me that you wouldn't... A disgrace, really? Like, you're not even going to give him like an opportunity? He is a Kennedy. You guys, you loved Kennedys before, back when the Democratic Party was actually the Democratic Party. But I guess maybe that's not their brand anymore. Maybe he should be Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Him, and then he'll get some.
Right.
I don't know.
I think people who speak like that, unfortunately, show that they're on a certain type of media diet, where they're only looking into certain things. You know, they hear him as the anti-vaxxer. They see that he's doing interviews with people in like the podcast world, which has become something else, where it's like, oh, just by like proximity, you're a bad person now. You know, a lot of people still think Joe Rogan's a bad person for his stance on, you know, whatever, COVID, all these things. So they see that, and it's worrisome to them. But I also see him probably appealing to a lot of people who wanted to leave the Democratic Party, a lot of moms, you know, who like you look at that election that happened in Virginia a year or two ago, when a lot of moms banded together to kind of save their kids from a lot of the tyranny, whether it was the transgender stuff in schools, COVID stuff. So, and what I did see of Kennedy on Rogan was him talking about how moms kind of changed his whole attitude towards the vaccines.
Yes.
Years in the 80s or 90s, whenever that was, late 80s, I think. So moms are really powerful. And I think he might be appealing to a lot of moms, you know, who see how the last few years affected their children. And so that, you know, that's appealing. It's appealing to me. It just, we'll see if he even gets there. I'd love to see him debate Biden. My God, it'd be a beautiful thing.
It would just be so, so amazing. Speaking of debates, though, we could have a real firestorm with a Trump DeSantis Vivek debate. What's your take on Vivek? He's been on Tim's show before, right? I only have one problem with the guy, and it's World Economic Forum Young Global Leader. To me, that's an automatic disqualification.
Yeah. I agree.
Other than that, he says the right things.
Yep.
But so does Tulsi, and Tulsi's one too. So
I was just going to say that. So is he saying all the things you want to hear? That's the problem. What is he attached to? I've seen him confronted about that. I don't think I've seen an answer from him about it. So, you know, I love to see people answer those questions in terms of him. He's saying all the right things otherwise, you know. He was rather quick to responding to the first indictment with Trump. And I appreciated that. You know, he's been fairly brave in that regard. You know, I also like how he talks about the CIA. I think he said he likes to abolish it. So, yes. You know, if he turns out to be a good actor in terms of all this, I think he'd be great in the administration. You know, I think it kind of has to be Trump. You know, I'm kind of tired of all of it. DeSantis was a great governor during most of COVID. He's a very unappealing candidate. For the presidency. So the infighting is such a distraction, and it's taken up so much like Twitter time where people are going back and forth on this. It's fun to watch, and it's fun to see different candidates kind of trip around this whole campaign so far. It's still so early. Honestly, I feel like we've never even left the campaign cycle from 2015. You know, it used to be growing up, we used to have a campaign. It was crazy. And we take a break, take a breather, we get back to it. But it's been nonstop, which is why I think the country's so deranged now, because it's like we're on this drug constantly. DeSantis is unappealing to me. I thought his Twitter spaces was kind of a joke when he announced with Elon, not because of the technical difficulties. I thought it was cool that they tried that. I'm into them trying new things. It was a little gimmicky. It seemed like a novelty, but it was more of it seemed like a crutch for him to try to be appealing to a voter, right? Where it was like Elon kept saying, it's this unscripted here, but I mean, if you listen to it, to me, it sounded like he was reading from script the whole time. DeSantis said it. I didn't like the Q&A part of it. Honestly, this is just my theory. I don't know, but it sounded like the questions were even given beforehand. It just, everything seemed so canned that I was just like, love or hate Trump. And like, I have a lot of problems with Trump. In terms of the last like few last year, like COVID, really, and pardons and all that stuff, Trump's authentic. He's him no matter what. You know it. Hate it or love it,
for better or for worse. He's him. He can't be anybody else.
And authenticity is very, very rare. You know, Carrie Lake is one of the only other people that I got to meet her. But like, you could just watch her and be like, "Well, that lady's authentic."
I like her. I don't know a ton about her. And I despise politicians by default, but when I watch her, she's very sharp. She's super engaged. Yep. She'd be great. She'd be a great vice president, right?
That's exactly how I feel. So when I was with her, it was during the election trial for the votes in Phoenix. So we met briefly the day before the trial, had a great talk. I mean, she's just like, we talk about moms being like so strong and rebellious. Yeah. Like she's a quintessential strong mom who you should fear, but she'll also like shield you, right? At the same time. So when I remember sitting down with her, it was just like she had this like eye contact that was almost like terrifying, but also comforting. I was like, wow, this lady's like super powerful.
She feels engaged. When I see her talk, it doesn't feel canned. And if someone's asking her a question, she's looking at this. This is my bias because I come out, I co-own a company that does media training for pro athletes. So we get guys ready for the media, for dealing with the media. So I'm always sort of watching when anybody really, but candidates especially interact with the media. And maybe it's because she comes from the media. She understands the dynamic there. But if someone asks her a question, she's looking at them and she waits for them to ask the whole thing. And then she gets in and I go, well, she's with it. And of course, then just like the juxtaposition between like
where Biden is cognitively and where Carrie Lake is, you're like, oh my God, he's with it and great. He's totally not with it. And
she,
so,
appealing she, to me. She is also not afraid to push back, right? Which is what I like about Trump too. People are very put off by the pushback, and look, it's not always great. You know, I roll my eyes a lot when Trump does it. I'm like, why do we have to do it this time? But you know what? He's going to do it. I don't care. Whatever. They all deserve to be pushed back on in the media and the political sphere. But I remember with Carrie Lake I think it was the first day of the election. I mean, the trial. We walk in. She sees one like local reporter who's been ragging on her, and she's on her way to her seat, and she stops in front of him, looks at him, and goes, "Oh, this guy writes fantasy," and just points at him. I was just like, "That is amazing," and it said, "Yeah, just very like tough, very quick." She was ready with it, put him in his place, and you know, it's stuff like that I really do appreciate. But she's got a handle on things. So for me, that's the ideal VP pick for Trump. I would love to see RFK in that administration. I don't know what RFK has said about it. I think he said he would not work with him, although he has worked with Trump in 2016. I think Trump brought him on for something. Yeah, I think it was 2016 or 17, and he worked with Fauci. He knows how bad Fauci is for years.
He brought Trump brought RFK Jr. in to talk to him about, I think, wasn't he the one that he wanted to talk to him about vaccines? And then Bill Gates got involved and said, that's a non-starter.
I think so.
Pushed him out of the way.
Which says a lot. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I would love to see that. I don't know how possible that is. I think that would just be, if they could all, this is ridiculous because I do want to leave it to voters, you know, if you still believe in the voting process. But if you want to, you know, it would be interesting to see them just be announced, be like, Carrie's my VP. This is my administration. Let's just stop the bullshit. But yeah, you know, I'm just so, I'm so tired of the never ending campaigning. Yeah. I honestly don't know how this country is going to even survive another election, another campaign cycle. I mean, it's ugly. Now we have, Chris Christie, like why? We have the mayor of Miami is now running.
I know. I saw that yesterday. I'm like, is this money laundering? Like, what are you guys doing?
Notoriety.
Yeah. You're trying to buy a little fame. You're saying, well, I ran for president once. Look, Trump sucks all the oxygen out of the room. This was a catastrophe for DeSantis to announce, because what he really should have done, DeSantis does have appeal to a lot of people in Florida that like the way he ran things. And he's sort of like Trump light. He's kind of like, he says some of the Trumpian type things, but you feel like he's sort of easier to work with. I don't know why he didn't just sit it out this one. Let Trump do what Trump does, because he's on a revenge tour anyway. Stay out of the way and then come back the following time. Because Trump, you know, I mean,
look, we're in a world
here.
Right. We're in a world where the former president's being indicted twice and it's only helping him.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not going to fight this monster. I mean, you all should just be. I get it. I enjoy the pushback. I want to see, you know, as much pushback on Trump from everyone, because he's got a lot of things to answer to, in my opinion, with the pardons, with the vaccine, with, you know, Fauci, with a lot of stuff. So if we can get that kind of thing with this whole debacle, that'd be fine. But it just seems like a lot of these people are jumping in because they're going to get a book deal.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I mean, I'm with you. I have my... There's things about Trump that I like. There's things about Trump that I don't like. The Operation Warp Speed, to me, it's unforgivable. Unless he's got to come out and say, I believed it because I was given information that told me to believe, you know, that made me believe it. But now in retrospect, it was a mistake and I regret that. If he said something along those lines, which I doubt he ever will, but if he did, I think that would go a long way with that segment of the population that were like, I'm okay with Trump. I don't maybe love him, but there's that one thing that's like a deal killer for me. It's this, it's this Operation Warp Speed. Not only did he put it in place, but he owned it in a way that, you know, he's still doing he thinks he's doing victory laps about that. And we're like, it was the wrong move. Like, if you could get away from that, then he's got a chance. But
it's, he's going to have to do something about that. Because it's funny, I didn't vote for him in 2016. I didn't vote at all that year. I was so over it. I did vote for him in 2020. And I've spent a lot of time, you know, having a lot of debate with friends and family online about so many good things that Trump was doing that went underreported, right? There was so much that I was into. You know, yeah, he might be brash, you know, like that. I tend to like that thing. But I'm a fan of Kanye, right? you know, that kind of attitude is... I was telling people Trump's the first punk rock president, you know, even though he's in a suit and he's a guy with a lot of money from New York City with the Golden Escalator, there was a punk rock attitude to him that was appealing to my senses of wanting to push back and rebel against all these institutions. And watching them then double down on him made it all the more like important, because like he's doing the right thing because they're so angry. Yeah. So, you know, and then I spent so much time, and this is all pre-COVID, you know, having these conversations with people who, like your friend who said RFK Jr. is deranged, having those kind of conversations about Trump and being like, why do you think that? Like, where did that start? And then, you know, they point to good people on both sides. You know, that was a big one. Yeah. And I was like, well, okay, let's break that down, because it's not what you think it is. Here's the full video. He actually denounced all these people. So I'm like having all these conversations, really like trying to change people's minds. You know, I don't know how many votes I changed. I know I changed a few, which felt kind of good. Because life was a little bit better under, you know, before COVID, clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
But then COVID happened. I'm like, well, this just kind of undoes all that stuff. It was a real bummer.
That's how I felt. Like he made the people that I despise, like the mainstream media, he made them very nervous. He made all the right people very nervous. And I like that because they were unsure really what this guy was going to say. I would have liked for him to have, I'm like you. I would have liked for him to have, you know, listen, it's kind of hard. The sales pitch is we're going to drain the swamp. And then the first guy you bring in is John fucking Bolton. Are you kidding me? That sent like the wrong message to people, even if it was like strategically the right thing to do, which it couldn't have been. I don't know how it could have been. But even if it were. It's like I just ran out of campaign of draining the swamp. You can't bring in the guy that wants war more than I've never met a guy with a bigger boner for war than John Bolton.
Right. Exactly. This is why, you know, I love the idea of Trump as the battering ram to continue this revenge tour of destroying these institutions that have really that deserve it. Right. Yeah. But the decisions he made, the people he surrounded himself with, were terrible. And the way he handled COVID was terrible, which is why I'm like, wow, I'm really considering RFK Jr. But then it's like, there's a lot of cons with him I don't know about. Who's he going to pick, first of all? What are his, you know, I believe he's pro-choice, but it's without the state level now. So what effect can he have on that? Will he change that? The way he views gun rights doesn't seem so good, right? So we'll see. I'd like to see him pressed on that more, but he handled COVID rather gracefully. I mean, he wrote that book about Fauci. I didn't even finish it, honestly. It made me so sick. I don't know how far along I got. I was like, I have to actually put this away. It's funny, Rogan said the same thing when I was watching. I was like, that is literally how I felt. It made me sick that this guy was in charge for so long. And I'm like, I gotta put it down, right? Because it wasn't just confirming a lot of the biases I already had about Fauci, but I was just, you know, all these other things. Like, why? And then why would Trump keep this guy around? I mean, this guy... Yeah. I remember saying, like, well, we need Nuremberg trials for this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because this is so heinous. These are literally crimes against humanity. And Fauci's being trotted around on all, you know, Kimmel and whoever else, you know, will have him. He's doing all those shows. And it was very disturbing. So it's like, when I think about that, RFK is appealing to me. But we'll see. You know, there's a lot of stuff I have to know about first.
Yeah. And of course, we never know like how much of what they say on the campaign trail is what they feel they have to say, and what they intend to do after they get in office might be different. And it might be better. Like they might have some things he might be like, oh, I don't really say I'm anti-vax. I say I'm pro safe vaccine, you know, wink, wink. Yeah, but what it really means is, well, I'm anti-vax, but I just don't want to say that because the media will then just only focus on that. So I wonder if he's got some bigger plans that he can't really talk about without getting, you know, becoming the third Kennedy.
For sure. And I also, you know, I said it earlier and people are going to think it's a joke, but if Kanye decides to jump back in, it's going to be crazy because he's going to find a way to make them take him seriously, at least hear him out. I mean, I really think he means it. When I was with him, hearing the stuff he was talking about, he's not kidding. So whether or not people take that seriously, he's taking it seriously. And anytime I've seen him throughout his career say these things and then get you know mocked for it, he finds a way to come back. And I'm not saying he's gonna become president, but right. He's gonna find a way to become, like, invade this space again, which is gonna make it even crazier. It'll make it so he's unavoidable if he does it, which I do think it's going to happen.
He needs to watch the 80s movie Brewster's Million with Richard Pryor, where Richard Pryor inherits $30 million and he's forced to spend it all in 30 days, but he can't own any tangible assets and he can't tell anyone what he's doing. He finally discovers that the best way to waste all the money is to run for president, but he runs on a campaign of none of the above. So he wastes all his money, but he wants people to vote for somebody like nobody. It's great. I could see Kanye doing something like that. It'd be like the just vote for nobody campaign.
I could see it too. It's such a circus that, I mean, it's only just begun. We have no idea how crazy it's going to get.
God, you take the circus of running for president, you take the circus of what follows Kanye West. And Kanye is like, he's not just like some guy that shows up on TMZ. He's like a guy that is assigned multiple TMZ photographers that just follow him everywhere he goes. Like he's Trumpian in that regard, where he's impossible to ignore for whatever reason. And it's this really interesting dynamic that some people have and some people don't. But
where
when Trump walks into a room, everybody looks at him. Everybody notices him. There's something about him. Maybe it's on like an energetic level. Even if you're looking at him because you despise him, you can't help yourself. So Kanye, Trump Kanye ticket. Oh shit. There we go.
I think that was floated around at some point. I forget if we actually put it out there. There was a point where I was like a week or two writing different things for Kanye. And I think we did put it out there. It was on True Social. You have to go look, where we wrote a thing saying, we were saying Trump, if he wants, could be the vice president for Kanye.
Yeah. Make America so groove again, man. Yeah.
We
could have some fun with this. You got into Tim's era, his orbit from your Tales from the Inverted World. Do you have paranormal experiences?
I grew up in a really crazy old house, but actually Tim and I started Inverted World together. I have been writing weird paranormal true crime stories beforehand for different places. And then I randomly tuned in to some IRL episode, and he said he was looking for someone to write those kind of stories. And I was still a professor at that point, actually at the college where Frank from quite frankly went to, Manhattanville College. And I had to be out. It was just, it was terrible for all the reasons you can imagine. And so I knew I was going to be quitting fairly soon. I sent an email and months went by. I quit my job. I had nothing lined up. And then a week or two later, Tim emailed me back and invited me down to West Virginia. And we came up with this whole concept for Tales from the Inverted World. So, and it was perfect because I grew up in the middle of the woods in the Hudson Valley in New York, right outside of the military academy. My parents are coaches for their equestrian team. So it's like a horse farm.
Okay.
And we're civilian. So we're like the only civilians in this like military place, which is a funny insight to the bureaucracy of a military compound. I mean, if you can imagine all the, I mean, it was just a debacle, a debauchery.
I bet.
So watching all that, but we had no neighbors and it was a very historical place. And the house was built in early 1700s and the other half of the house was built in the early 1800s. So we always joked about ghosts being in the house just because of the age, and it looked kind of spooky. And in this town, you know, Edgar Allan Poe was there for a while because he was a cadet at the academy. So I was always, you know, into Poe growing up. And then I think I was probably in my teens when we found out there was a young boy in 1979 on Super Bowl Sunday who was shot dead in the house by his brother.
Ooh.
It was like the brother was just playing a prank and he pulled the dad's rifle and killed this kid, Jimmy, which I actually investigate that story for the first Inverted World book at TimCast. It was a really, really terrible story. Speaking of bureaucracy, the West Point kind of covered that story up and really? You couldn't find anything. I mean, it really took a long time for me to find anything. A little media little article about the first event, about the shooting. I was able to find that on microfilm. But it was really old school. Growing up in the woods, I think just kind of the woods are, there's something going on in the woods. And I always felt that, I don't know what it is, but there's an energy to the forest. I don't know if I'm projecting that onto the forest because it's like this unknown in the darkness, but I always had that inclination to, there's something strange. And my family, we always joked about ghosts in the house. And then when we found out about Jimmy, we kind of like adopted the ghost into our family. We, to this day, my parents still at the house. And like, we talk about Jimmy, my parents are looking to leave that house soon. They've invited Jimmy to move with them. Like it's kind of like just this nonchalant relationship. We'd have these ghosts.
Right.
And that was a part of my life. And I always loved that. And I grew up reading authors like Nathaniel Hawthorne, who would also write about the woods, the dark cathedral of the forest. And that always felt, even though he was writing about like the Puritan times in Massachusetts, the way he wrote about the forest, if you read a story like Young Goodman Brown, that's literally how I felt my whole childhood was, where I just walk into the woods and, you come across the carcasses of animals, vultures eating them, just the vastness of the woods and getting lost on purpose and what it does to your imagination and whether or not that's a real portal into another like type of dimension, or it's you kind of bringing that energy with you, whatever it is, there's just this feeling that I was very attracted to. And that feeling found its way into my writing, from really early on into today, so I'm thankful for the forest. I'm thankful for growing up with no neighbors, although it was very bizarre growing up having no neighbors, and everyone, there was no other horse farm, so it's very weird for me to go to school and be like, you grew up on a farm, you ride horses, like all this stuff. But now I'm really grateful that I had that, for sure.
You and I both know Tony Merkel. He's my partner in the show. You seen Expedition Dogman?
No, I haven't. I need to. I love Tony.
When you get a chance, man.
I'm scared.
It's really freaky.
I'm scared. I saw some clips, and people, like when they're running around in the woods. It's funny because Tony and I have a weird connection with that, with Dogman. I don't know if he told you that story where I was on IRL, I think the first time in October of 21 or 22, I forget now. And I'm talking about one of the people I talked to for Inverted World in my first book, talking about bringing a dog man out of a portal. And Tony, I believe this is how it went, was listening at that same time, and he was on his way to film that documentary. And the invisible strings of the universe kind of brought us together. And then we soon after became friends. I invited him on to, I had this like a companion podcast to that first book where I had a different guest come on, and Tony came on and we talked about all that. And it was just so funny to me that like we kind of crossed paths like that, in terms of the Dogman and the Beast and the portal. He was thinking so much about it, and here I was, talking about an IRL. So it was great. But yeah, Tony's one of the best. I was in Nashville, or not Nashville, I was in Tennessee where he's at a few months ago. And it was great. He's the man.
Well, it's funny. He moved outside of Knoxville, and that's where I grew up in Southern California, but my grandparents lived in Knoxville. And so I spent every summer in Knoxville in the woods, just like you were talking about. So when you're describing that relationship with the woods, I know what that's like as a kid, going as far in as we could and building these elaborate forts with people and scenes, and of course, an era before cell phones or any of that stuff. It was like, we just take our bikes and we'll be back, before the sun goes down, maybe, hopefully.
Yep.
But it was summer, and you're a kid. And I never had anything weird happen. But Tony, and for those that everyone, I think everyone that listens to this knows about the confessionals, but Tony's show, The Confessionals, has really become this community for a lot of people that felt kind of isolated, maybe like crazy, like, oh, I had this experience and it's real to me, and because it really happened, I tell my family and they think I'm crazy, and he provides this nice little community for people that where they can go and and talk about some crazy stuff that nobody would ever really believe except for the people in that group. And is that how you got on to writing about the Long Island serial killer? Is this just somebody that's like from a regional standpoint that was sort of in your orbit that you
that was funny. That was a weird one how that started. So I started looking into that even years before I finished it for Tim for that book. I was asked to review a book called The Lost Girls, and it was an author who I think was serializing the story of the women who were murdered by the serial killer in Long Island. I think it was for the New York Magazine. And I was interested, but I was like, if I'm going to write anything about it, I think I'm going to do my own thing. Like, I'm not going to review a book. I was interested at first. The more I got into it, I was like, I think there's another angle I'd like to take. So I pitched that idea to the editors who pitched that first idea to me. And they're like, go for it. And like, little did I know, I would lose like 10 years of my life. Like, I went a little crazy writing that story. So my family's from Long Island, like my mom and my dad. So I'm familiar with the area. I grew up like two and a half hours north of it. But something about reading about the desolate area of that part of Long Island and the graveyard they found of those women and a child, by Gilgo Beach, it just shook me in a certain way. And my wife, Nancy, was pregnant with our son, our first. And it just moved me in a certain way where I was like, I think I'm going to go to Long Island and just kind of check this out. And one of the other things I saw a glimpse of in the Lost Girls book was the internet community that had kind of pushed itself into the victim world, where like they were now, like there were these online investigators, the desk chop, the armchair detectives, mm-hmm. kind of inserting themselves into the victims' families' lives, which is really weird to me. But also, some of them were trying to help. Some of them were just trolling. So I saw something with all that, and I got a little too invested. you know, there's that meme of Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny where he's at the wall.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I mean, that's literally what my wall looked like at the time. Yeah. We were living in Brooklyn. We lived in Brooklyn for like a year or two, which was hell. But my wife worked in Times Square, and it was easier for that. And I would commute 2 hours north to work as a furniture mover at the time, because I was freelance writing it as well. And so, yeah, I got invested, went down there, and it was just talking about the woods. You know, I walked around those woods where they found those bodies, whether it was on the beach or, you know, 30 minutes east in, I forget what the name of the town is. They found, you know, a corpse. This is the detail that really made me want to dive into the story. They found a mutilated corpse in the woods in this town about 30 minutes east of Gilgo Beach, which is where they found the graveyard of the serial killer's victims. And when they found, mind you, that mutilated corpse, they found, I think, 10 to 20 years ago. And then they found a pair of hands on Gilgo Beach that matched that torso. In like 2009 or 2010, I forgot the dates. And I was like, okay, that gave me like serious chills. And I love true crime. You know, I grew up loving Capote. My dad really put me onto Truman Capote early on because my dad loves Breakfast at Tiffany's and he loves In Cold Blood. And he was like, how can an author write these two books? And, yeah. So, you know, early on, I was very much into In Cold Blood and Capote. So I went in, and then really I inserted myself into the internet community who was trying to solve the murder. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of following them around, you know, digitally, going out to Long Island, talking to cops, talking to families, kind of scoping out the area. And yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite stories as much as I lost. I mean, cause when I say I lost 10 years of my life, I mean, the amount of paranoia that took over my spirit. You know, I'm using payphones to call, you know, people to be like, because I don't want them to know where I'm at. I'm reporting things to the FBI because we uncovered this this crazy website called Utopia Guide. I think it's still there. Utopia Guide is basically a Yelp for prostitutes in Long Island in this area that a lot of the women who were found dead were also reviewed on. And, you know, we found some really graphic, violent things on that website. that were very disturbing. So I tried to find who owns the website. You know, it was the person who paid for that website was listed as the Rock of Gibraltar. You know, so right, it was right. a lot of bizarre things. So yeah, that story took a lot. Took a pause on it. There was an early draft of that published in Penthouse, and then I kind of like went back into it because there was new updates with that story in the past few years. And I went back and talked to some of the families, and I went back and talked to new detectives. And yeah, now that a much bigger version, a more complete version, is now in the first Inverted World book. And yeah, that's a really, really dark story.
Yeah. Do you like writing fiction or nonfiction better?
I like both. You know, I think I'm more comfortable with nonfiction, but I tend to use a lot of the qualities of fiction when I write nonfiction. And I don't mean I'm just making stuff up. I mean, like, I love the metaphor. I love the freedom. I love like trying talking to different voices a lot. You know, I go back and forth between my own objectivity and subjectivity, which I try to tell the reader when I'm doing it, you know, because something I hate about the corporate media is they dress themselves up as being objective and then clearly being subjective. But, you know, I like to tell the reader, like, look, this is why I'm so attached to this. This is my bias. I'm telling you this because I want you to know, like, I'm not the authority on anything I write about. I just spend a lot of time with it. Doesn't mean I'm the expert. And you should also trust no experts, and actually don't trust anyone who says they're authority on anything, because they're probably full of shit. Yeah. So I love fiction. I've written a lot of fiction. But I think I've taken a lot of the things I like most about fiction in terms of, figurative language, and then applying that to nonfiction, where I'm writing about really true events. But it allows me to, you know, my imagination, kind of dive into the darker parts of my thoughts and kind of spread those out through the nonfiction.
Yeah. I've only written nonfiction books so far. But when Jeff Berwick and I wrote Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, we initially had Ron Paul, who agreed to write the foreword for it, but he had his medical incident like 2 days afterwards. And Jeff's like,
"Oh wow,
dude, what do we do?" I was like, "Oh shit, we got to let him off the hook." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah." So we had Doug Casey come in, and Doug Casey from International Man wound up writing the foreword. And what's funny is I talked to Doug about this, because he's written fiction and nonfiction books, and his nonfiction books are a lot like the stuff I write. You know, it's governmental fuckery and stuff like that, and deep dives into control structures and whatnot. But then he's got this fiction series of books where it's this guy who goes around and gets into these adventures and made a bunch of money early on right out of college from investing in a penny stock of a mining company. And I'm reading through this and I'm going, this isn't fiction, Doug. This is you. He's like, well, I mean, listen, there's a little, I said, no. I know what you're doing. This is a cover story. You're writing about real shit under the protective layer of fiction, right? So is that how we are going to have to get the word out to a lot of normies out there? Is dress it up like fiction and make it
seem possible
and have it be real?
Yeah, I think a lot of that. I mean, the left has done it a pretty good job of that for the past few decades.
It's their guiding principle.
I mean, to me, like, you look at the White House, it's Hollywood right now. The way they're able to make our president look like he's not a reanimated corpse. But yeah, I think fiction, we need to really get back into art and showing people through the prism of art, whether it's film, books, whatever, this is how you can guide the future through art. You know, it's so important to me. I loved teaching that. I hated the institution of colleges, but I loved being like, look, art is complete freedom. You know, I don't have to like everything you do. You know, because I like a lot of stuff fiction wise that I think a lot of people don't really enjoy these days. And I love Donald Barthelme because it's so like absurd. I love Thomas Pynchon because it's so absurd and conspiratorial. That's when I'm thinking of writing fiction. It's like completely absurd that, you know, it's like so absurd, that kind of thing. And you can kind of slip in these ideas without beating someone over the head with the ideology, right? Because the left was fairly good at slipping their ideologies into their art and then kind of mind controlling people.
Yeah.
But now they are so blatantly bludgeoning us with ideology that the art sucks. I mean, everything sucks. I can't think of a lot of stuff. in the past 10 years. You know, I think of in terms of TV, I love True Detective. I love The Leftovers. I love Barry. You know, Barry somehow seems to evade a lot of the bullshit in terms of ideology. It's really funny. It's really dark. It's very violent. So people, you know, the right, whatever you want to consider that, because it's all so amorphous, but the anti-establishment, let's say, crowd, they need to get back into the art and find a way to control the culture again, to push the culture. Because right now it's like, look, everything is great. All these conversations are really good. It's amazing how the new media is kind of destroying the old media. I mean, and COVID accelerated that. And it's amazing that we have all these long form conversations, but I see a lot of art being forgotten. And a lot of it's just coming out of the school systems now, which is, and I have a firsthand experience of that. The stuff that students feel allowed to do in school is very bland. So, and I'm not saying you need college to make art, you know, actually don't go to college is what I'm trying to tell people. Yeah. But people go to schools thinking they're going to learn about how to make art, which is false. You can learn work ethic perhaps at a college. If you want to do art, you can learn how to keep a schedule. You can learn how to read different things, which is all very necessary, but you don't need college for that. You know, people need to just get back into, what does art mean? And why is it important? And don't discredit it. And I'm positive. I think we're going to see a wave of art, whether it's music, film, writing, that is going to be so anti-establishment from like the newer crowd that the Puritans on the left are going to be so shocked. It's going to be like how, you know, when I was growing up, I loved NWA. I love West Side Connection. I love Marilyn Manson, Nine Inch Nails, like all those things that were so transgressive. And like, you see the left trying to do that now with like Lil Nas X or something. And they do the stuff. Right. It's not controversial because we've already seen that. You're just redoing things that were done 30 years ago. When Manson did it, it was fairly rebellious because it hadn't been done before. Maybe Madonna and certain things. But like, I think people are not ready for that wave of art that's going to really shock people. And so I'm happy for that. That's my favorite kind of art. And I'm not saying all art has to do that. It doesn't. But for me, that's my favorite type of art. And I think it's coming.
I think we're done with Sam Smith, like wrapped up in cellophane, like a ham. I think we're sort of past that. The left is, they're so bad. Like you said, they're bad at, they overdo it. It's like, I'm going to add some salt to this soup. And like, eventually at some point you're like, it's just all salt. And you went crazy. You made everybody trans and the Little Mermaid's black. And it's like, I get it. You're trying to manipulate us. We're done with it. But there's real opportunity for the right or for the conservatives or however you want to define them to just be, I don't know, not the left. And that's a good enough strategy at this point. Like, just
I'm on a
crazy.
Yeah, well, that's really hard for them to do. I'm on a real big Christian death metal kick right now. and this is the thing. And my goodness, there's this band called Cultist, and they're Christian. And they're the scare. And I love death metal. I was in a death metal band for a very long time. I sang in one. I love metal, all types of metal. So, you know, it was shocking to me that I had only just recently discovered this is even a thing. There's a lot of them. Cultist is the best, but you read their lyrics like, wow, you know, this is Christian, but they're terrifying, you know, and it's stuff like that I don't think people are really ready for, you know. People remember nu metal having Christian bands like POD and whatnot back in the day, but this is different and it's terrifying and I can't wait.
We're coming for you. The right strikes back, man. Well, hey, listen, if you swing that pendulum as far left as you can, where everybody's cake gender at lunch and then they change themselves back later in the day, then what do you expect, man? You're going to get Christian death metal. You know what I mean? That's the antidote to woke Disney. What's the best place for people to find you, to buy your books, to support your work, to follow what you're doing?
Yeah, thank you. So the first Inverted World book, which has a Long Island serial killer story, that you can find at invertedworldbook.com. So that's got like abduction stories, serial killer stories, the story I was telling you about the boy who was shot in my house that I grew up in. And then the next book that we just put out a few months ago, that you can find at ghostofthecivilwar.com. And that is a, you know, one long story about this town in Washington, Georgia, where I was looking for the Confederate gold and then came upon all this paranormal activity, UFOs, ghosts, possession, witches, you know, all real stories, you know, real accounts from people. So there's that. Those are the two Inverted World books. And you can find me at Shane Cashman everywhere except TikTok, where I was just banned forever for posting a video of me and Alex Jones talking.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it pretty much.
I hate TikTok anyway. I really don't care. But it's funny to me that just the sound of Alex Jones' voice was, that was it. Nothing controversial.
I'm sure they have some sort of technology that, like, the minute he starts talking about, you know, the frogs, it's just immediately, it switches it off. That's Shane Cashman, everybody. Go support his work. He might become Kanye West, honky vice president. You never know. You can check my stuff out over at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
Moto Casino, America.
a social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.